It hit the man and snowplowed him along, mangling him in the process. Finally, some distance down the corridor, the train came to a standstill. I crept behind it. I had been through this before, half an hour earlier, and had been mildly surprised when I had found that Norquinco was only knocked out. That had, of course, been a blessing in disguise. But now there was to be no disappointment. The train had done its work creditably. Now, rather than the crushed toolkit, what made it stop was some sluggishly responding safety mode. But it had been much too late to save the passenger. I lifted my sleeve and spoke into my comms bracelet. "Sky Houseman here. I'm afraid there's been a terrible, terrible accident." That had all been 4 months ago. A regrettable coda to our relationship, but Norquinco had ultimately not let me down. I assumed so, at least, and would know for sure in a few moments. On the main view screen was a view looking down the spine of the Santiago, from a vantage point a few meters above the hull. It was an exercise in vanishing points, crisp perspectives that would have thrilled a Renaissance artist. The 16 sleeper rings containing the dead marched away, diminishing in size, foreshortened towards ellipses. And now the first and closest of them began to move, kicked loose by a series of pyrotechnic charges studded around the ring. The ring uncoupled from the hull and drifted lazily away from it, tipping slowly to one side as it moved. Umbilical stretched between ship and ring to breaking point, and then snapped cleanly, whiplashing back. Frozen gases trapped in severed pipes erupted in crystal clouds. Somewhere, alarms began to sound. I heard them only dimly, though they seemed to be causing considerable consternation amongst my crew. Behind the first ring, the second was breaking loose as well. The third trembled and shucked itself loose from its moorings. All along the spine the pattern was repeated. I had arranged it well. I had thought to have all the rings blow their separation charges at once, so that they would drift away in clean, parallel lines. But there was no poetry in that. It pleased me instead to stagger the releases, so that the rings seemed to follow each other, as if obeying some buried migratory instinct. "Do you see what I'm doing?" I asked.
"I see it well enough," the other captain said, "and it sickens me."
"They're dead, you fool. What do they care now if they're buried in space or carried with us to journey's end?
They're human beings. They deserve to be treated with dignity, even if they're dead. You can't just throw them overboard."
"Ah, but I can, and I have. Besides, the sleepers hardly matter. What they mass is inconsequential compared to the mass of the machines that accompany them. We have a real advantage now. That's why we'll stay in cruise mode longer than you."
"One quarter of your sleepers isn't much of an edge, Houseman."
The other captain had obviously been doing his homework. The kind of calculations I had run could not have been far from his own thoughts.
"What kind of lead does that give you over us when you make orbit around Journey's End? A few weeks, at best?"
"It'll be enough," I said. "Enough to select the plumb landing sites and get our people down there and dug in."
"If you have anyone left. You killed a lot of those dead, didn't you? Oh, we know what kind of losses you should have run, Houseman. Your death rate should not have been much higher than our own. We had intelligence, remember? But we've only lost 120 sleepers ourselves. The same goes for the other ships. How did you become so careless, Houseman? Was it that you wanted them to die?"
"Don't be silly. If it suited my purposes to have them die, why wouldn't I have killed more of them?
And try and settle a planet with a handful of survivors? Do you know anything about genetics, Houseman? Or incest?"
I started to say that I had thought of that as well.